Good evening, everybody. Welcome back. This week is Parshas Tazria, and we're continuing with the Halachas of Pesach. This is part two, and we're going to be focusing on turning over your house. So we'll talk a little bit about the cleaning necessary to be able to turn over and the process of turning over in terms of kashering. And we'll try to touch a little bit also about that twilight zone when you're half turned over and half not. So in terms of cleaning, our obligation is to clean our houses and do bedikas chametz and remove all chametz from your house. Now, there are three concepts involved in cleaning for chametz, and that's important to understand the distinction, because it's not the same in terms of how we pursue the chametz and try to eradicate it. We don't do it in the same way, depending what we're trying to accomplish. There is a mitzvah, a positive commandment, tashbisu, to destroy chametz, and then there is also alaisasei, which are two of them, bal yirah, bal yimatzeh, the two alaisaseis that forbid us from owning chametz for the duration of Pesach. Now, that's why chametz is unique, that you can't even own it, and it can't be in your possession and on your property, and that's why we do bedikas chametz, and that's why we do bittel. Bedikas chametz is the checking for the chametz, and bittel is when we declare. You're supposed to do it twice, once at night and once in the morning before chametz becomes aser, and you're supposed to say kol chamir v'chamir v'dekeb reshusi, any kind of dough or sourdough that's in my possession should become batel, it should become nothing, and hefker. So those are the two things we do. We check for chametz, which means, i.e., we clean for chametz and then check to see that we cleaned well. And then we also do the bittel in order to both, like they both kind of, cover the holes that the other one left to make sure that we don't have any chametz, and even if we do, we don't own it. Now that's all in terms of the issues of owning chametz. Now there's a whole different issue on Pesach, a whole different avera, which is eating chametz, and that is a very serious avera. That's the one avera actually which has the punishment of kares, is very serious stat, very, very serious isser. And in addition, Chazal went very, very far with this isser of eating chametz, much further than they went with any other kind of isser, like treif, nevela, basar b'cholov, meat and milk, etc. All of those, basically, their understanding was that all year round we don't eat them, so we don't have to worry that someone's going to forget and eat it. It would be unusual. Whereas chametz, you've been eating it all year, so it needs an extra level of stringency in order for us truly to keep our distance from it. So that's why they added so much stringency in terms of the eating of chametz, and that's why even a tiny drop of chametz is not batel, and you can't kasher anything once it begins the time of Isser after Erev Pesach, no kashering anymore, and even if things are more than 24 hours old, 24 hours old from the last time chametz was in it, it's still a problem. Basically, everything that's not a problem by all other isurim on chametz is a problem, and hence it leads to this tremendous stringency when it comes to eating chametz. So again, there are two things we're trying to accomplish with our cleaning. A is we're trying to avoid having chametz so that we don't transgress, and we're mekayim the positive commandment of getting rid of all chametz, and to do that we clean, we do bedika, we check, and then we do bittel, we say we don't want it. And then we also want to ensure we do not transgress the isser of eating chametz, and that is midrabanan, even a tiny bit, and very, very stringent. Now, the difference between these two things is where you're cleaning, meaning you're cleaning the rest of your house. That's not because you're worried you're going to eat that chametz. The chametz that may be stuck in your child's sock drawer is not chametz that you're likely going to come to eat. That is more the bedika end of things, that we just want to make sure we don't own chametz. There is a possibility you might come to eat it, but that's not the point. The point more is just you have to make sure that you don't have any chametz. Whereas when you're cleaning your kitchen and you're cleaning your utensils or your kashering, etc., there it's the for the purpose of not eating chametz, and therefore it's much, much more stringent. And there is where we're really careful to do our best. Even a tiny drop of chametz doesn't exist. Whereas the rest of the house, when it's just for the sake of not owning chametz, it's not as important to get rid of the crumbs. Now, Chazal used a term that pirurim memela batli, that tiny crumbs are, they kind of dissolve themselves. They're battle by themselves. They're hefker by themselves. Nobody wants them anyway. And that is the kind of the guiding light over here in terms of what kind of cleaning we're doing in the rest of the house and what we're looking for. We're looking for something which wouldn't just be considered dirt. That's in a nutshell. So tiny crumbs that are mixed with dust, or especially if you spray them with Windex, like they're in cracks and crevices, that's exactly what Chazal were talking about. Pirurim mimele batli. Those are the kind of things that nobody wants them, nobody cares about them. It's perceived as dirt, as garbage. So therefore, doesn't require anything. The thing that requires us to clean and remove and look for when we do bidika are things that are not bottled by themselves. They're not dirt. So maybe there's the Cheerio under your couch. You wouldn't technically want to eat it because it's been there for a very long time, but it is not mamela batli. It's not garbage. It's we throw it in the garbage, but it's not essentially garbage. Whereas a couple of crumbs under your couch are. So that's the difference, and that's what we look for, and that is the principle in how a person should be doing his cleaning, or their cleaning in their cars and in the rest of their house. However, when it comes to the kitchen and the cabinets and the fridge, there we are trying to ensure that even a tiny drop of chametz doesn't get into our food. So that's why there's a lot more scratching and poking and elbow grease involved in cleaning those areas and those utensils and whatever it is that we use for Pesach, so that even a tiny drop of chametz doesn't get into it. So that's the rationale between the two, and it's important to distinguish between them, because when you clean your car, you do not have to clean it the way you clean a microwave or if you clean an oven. It's not the same thing. It doesn't require that level of cleaning. It just means whatever is garbage, and you don't need to do more than that. Whereas when you're cleaning your oven, it does have to be really as clean as possible. So that's the just to understand what we're doing when we're turning over. This is that's the the nature of the kind of cleaning we're doing. Now, in turning over itself, there's an interesting, there's the kind of the twilight zone when our house is kind of half turned over and half not. And that's when all the stress and don't bring chametz here, don't bring chametz there, do a chametz dance and stand on your head, and all that kind of stuff to ensure that chametz doesn't get from one place to another. And again, it's the actual thing we should be the most worried about is that it shouldn't get into the kitchen where we're cooking. In the rest of the house, even though it's been cleaned for Pesach, they don't necessarily have to do a chametz dance before they go there. A couple of crumbs get there is not going to be the problem. If they carry the granola bar there, yes, that's not good. But other than that, it's not as much of an issue. But if to go back and forth from the kitchen to the chametz and the chametz to the kitchen, that is where one should be more careful and see to it that chametz stays where it is. Now, in terms of kashering, in past years, we've discussed ovens, and there's three basically kind of ovens. There's gas, there's electric, and then there's the glass top. So in terms of Pesach, the glass top was always this big no-no because there's no way to kasher it. We hold you can't kasher glass. It was always a problem. However, Baruch Hashem, they have developed a new product, and it's a mat. A mat that you can put on top of the glass, and it heats through the mat, and that's great because as long as the pot is not touching the mat, the glass, there's something that's mafsig that separates it. It's fine. The Star K, I think, gives their okay on it. You can find it online. It's, I believe, a Jewish company that created it, obviously. And it's Baruch Hashem. That's a big Yeshua for this problem because so many people get the glass top ovens because that's basically like what's the cutting edge at this point, and then when it comes Pesach, it's not great. So, or they go to a place where it has a glass top oven, and so on and so forth. That's that. Now Baruch Hashem, there's an etzah for that. The other kind of ovens, the electric or a gas. So you make a distinction between the burners on top and the oven itself. The oven itself, if it's self-clean, it's pretty straightforward. You just do a self-clean. There's not much you really need to do before you self-clean it. Obviously, it's a good idea to clean it out because otherwise it'll make a mess. But it doesn't really have to be too clean because the heat is intense enough that it burns everything to a crisp. So really, even if you forgot and you find something in there and ashes, those are nothing to worry about. Well, the heat is hot enough that it's called a libun chomer, and whatever is there is kosher. That's if you self-clean. Halachically speaking, you strictly don't really have to self-clean. Some people hold you do, but the prevailing opinion is you don't really have to self-clean. Really, it's sufficient to do what we typically do anyway to switch between melchig and fleishig, which is to turn your oven on to the highest. That works for chametz too, and leave it on for like an hour. So that's an option as well. So if for whatever reason, you turned over and you didn't have a chance to self-clean your oven and you want to do it through the night or whatever, you really could l'chatchila do this option. But if you do this option of turning it on to 500 for an hour, then it does have to be clean. So then you have to make sure that it's clean. But if your oven is clean, then that's an option. The tap, the grates, they don't really need to be kashered. And this is an example where Pesach is more stringent than the rest of the year. The rest of the year we say, who cares if the grates are kosher or not? The grates are touching the pot and the pot's touching the food, so usually that's not a problem. It's like it's like there's something in between them. Nonetheless, for Pesach, we're more machmer. And so if it's electric, there's not much you do. You just turn it on and it turns red, which I think is not actually it becoming red hot. It's just they just make it that way, that it should glow red. So you just leave it on for a little while until it gets very, very hot, and that's sufficient. And gas, really, that's enough. Also, some people say for gas, you need to do a little bit more so the whole thing should get very hot. So then you can just put it in your oven. You can put it in before or after you self-clean it. It doesn't make a difference. And then I don't recommend putting it in there while you're self-cleaning it. And then leave the oven on again for 500 for about 20 minutes. That's enough for those grates to get hot. And that's enough. And again, this is only the thing that actually touches the pot. Anything else doesn't require anything, like the little round disc that's on the gas flame or the container, the receptacle under it. All those do not require kashering. Likewise, your oven itself, the tap of your oven, you don't have to kasher, you don't have to do anything. But if you don't do anything to it, then you can't put a pat down on it, which I'm talking about the space in between the burners. So if you want to be able to put a pat down in that space between the burners, then you need to cover it. Otherwise, you don't really have to do anything because no cooking goes there, and if any food falls there, yeah, then you would not be able to use it. It's not kasher. It's very difficult to kasher that part. I guess you technically could do Iru, you could pour hot water there, but not recommended. I would recommend just covering it, and that's enough. It's kind of what we do for Pesach anyway. Whatever we can cover with silver foil, we do. So definitely that's no exception. We cover that as well, but it doesn't halachically need to be covered, nor does the receptacle under have to be covered. So that's in terms of the oven. Now, in terms of kashering, so there's not that much else we kasher. If you have, obviously, utensils that you want to use and switch over for Pesach or Bechers. Bechers really don't really have to be kashered. They don't really get chametzdig. If you wash them in a dishwasher, then they could become chametzdig. Then they would require kashering. But otherwise, there's not much way that they could become chametzdig. I guess you can wash them with dishes, very hot water. So I remember my Rav way back used to say that you make it more chametz thing when you kasher it than it has ever been. That's just a halachic perspective, because the chametz goes out, goes back in, whatever. Point is that it usually, if it actually has no contact with chametz, there's not really much that it requires. But our minig is we do kasher all those things that we use the rest of the year. We kasher it for Pesach as well, and it's the right thing to do. But that's typical Haggalah, which means you heat up hot water, wait till it bubbles, and then you put the things in one at a time. If you put in too many things and it stops to bubble, you have to wait and let it start bubbling again. And if it's uncovered, it won't bubble. So you need to cover it again and let it bubble, and then you could uncover it and then put in more things. Usually you have a good, I don't know, 3-4 minutes till it stops bubbling, then you cover it, give it another 2 minutes, and that's the correct way to do it. If you are kashering silverware, you need to throw them in one at a time, but then they can gather at the bottom, that's fine. And a key part of Haggalah, whenever you're kashering anything through boiling water, and this is the time of year that you can kasher, all those forks and knives and spoons that have accumulated, so you can definitely do that. As long as they haven't been used in 24 hours, they can be kashered, and then you can technically use them for Pesach if you want, but you can also put them away. It's fine to kasher them together with whatever you're doing for Pesach. But the point is that once you kasher it, you need to wash it off with cold water. This is it's not ma'akev. If you don't do it, it's still kosher, but it's part of the kashering process. So you do need to make sure you don't burn yourself. Be careful, and you take it out and you run under some cold water over it. It doesn't have to be right away. It could be after a little while. But that's the correct way to do the Haggalah process. If you have something very large that doesn't fit all at once, so that's a very important distinction between Haggalah and Tfilas Kelim. It's not the same thing. Tfilas Kelim, the whole thing has to be immersed at once. Can't have a chatzitza, and every part of it, if it's an electric appliance, including the plug, everything has to go underwater at one time. Whereas Haggalah does not require it to be done all at once. So you can rotate something and part this part, that part, up, down, get the whole thing. One practical eitzah that I do, which helps sometimes for larger pots if you need to kasher them, is you can take like a roaster pan. Those are like the deeper than a 9x13, and they're larger. You can fill water, not to the top, but fill like halfway with water and put it directly on fire or on gas or on electric. You can put it directly on. It heats up very quickly, bubbles very quickly, and then you have a huge pot and a very wide pot and deep too. So that makes it much easier to kasher larger things. So you have that option as well. So that pretty much covers us. Now, the last thing I want to talk about is counters. I've said this a number of times in the past. I'm not a very big chassid of kashering counters. Even though I agree that counters could be kashered, just about any countertop could be kashered. There is those that are machmir on formica because it's plastic, and they hold you can't kasher plastic, or at least for Pesach you can't kasher plastic. This is the way I grew up. Halachically speaking, you really could kasher everything. That's the ikar halacha, is that you can kasher everything. But and even if you don't kasher plastic, but you certainly can kasher the other things like granite, quartz. Basically, all other things can be kashered. The problem with kashering is it's very hard to do it properly because you need to get hot. If you're pouring hot water, it makes a huge mess because the hot water stream that you're pouring has to touch and it can't spread. That's not kashering. So you'd have to make sure you pour on each area, which first of all, you need a lot of water, makes a big mess, and it's hard to get it on every spot. You have to kind of wipe it down a little bit in the middle because too much water accumulates. You can't really pour into water. So it's hard, and it's not easy. So another option is a steamer, but a steamer, you really have to get a commercial steamer, which gets hot enough because steam itself doesn't kasher. So what you need to what needs to happen is it has to create condensation on the countertop, and then the steamer heats up that condensation hot enough to kasher. That's the way it needs to work. Your regular steamer, which I own one, does not get hot enough to do that. It makes very hot steam, but it doesn't make hot enough steam to heat up the condensation on the countertop. There are commercial steamers. There are people in the community that have. They're willing to give it out. But again, it's a very slow and tedious process. They'll tell you how long you need to stay on each spot. So especially if you have quite a considerable amount of counter space, it's a lot of time, a lot of invested effort in doing that. It's mostly just for aesthetics, let's be honest. And it's just for 7 days. And it's hard to do a good job and do a halachically good job. So that's why I'm not very pro. And I prefer just to cover it. It takes a few minutes and you're done. Okay, so Be'ez Hashem next week, we'll move on to the halachas of the Seder.